And good afternoon and welcome to Lambda Weekly. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with Ron Landis and the late Patty Fink. Our guest today is... Harriet, you've known Patty for years. Have you ever known her to be on time?
Patty and I share that characteristic.
Thank you.
With pride.
Thank you.
Well, you didn't show it today. You got here in plenty of time, Harriet.
Comrade, and so did I.
So did
actually,
you.
So did Patty, actually.
We're all here. That's on time.
Well, this is the second week in a row that we can introduce our guest as the Honorable.
Yes.
Our guest this week is the Honorable Harriet Earhart.
Thank you.
Welcome, Harriet.
Thank you so much.
Harriet served. We're delighted to have
been
you.
A long time.
It has been 10 years since she's been on the show.
I miss the old studio, but I feel much safer.
Yeah, exactly. The desk is not going to fall through the floor.
No, we are not going to fall.
We don't have to turn the air conditioning off every time we turn the mics on.
That's right.
It's great.
I miss the pigeons, though. You know.
Now, Harry, you were in the legislature for 8 years?
8 years, yes.
And four terms. What years were those?
From 94 to 2002.
To 2002.
That's 8 years.
That's 8 years.
That's 8. Good.
Yeah.
That was it.
This legislature, well, all I can say is Harriet served under a good governor.
That's right.
As opposed to this legislature, which served under a not-so-good governor, I think.
Well, the jury's out on it, but the legislature itself has moved so far away from what I believe the people in Texas want and desire.
We summed it up before you got here. I just need you to give me A, B, C, or D on this one. The current legislature is A, criminally negligent, B, psychotic and deranged, C, defended us against an invasion by Obama, or D, gee, I think they did a splendid job.
How about B?
B.
However, I think they may really be criminally. I think we will find that a number of the things they passed, although not criminally negligent, will be unconstitutional.
Mm-hmm.
I do think that they just had total disregard for the Constitution.
Well, isn't that negligent?
I think so.
I mean, there are some laws that pass that are overturned because it's questionable whether or not that's legal. These weren't well intended.
These were just horrible
that everybody knows are unconstitutional.
Right.
But you have to file against us. And in the meantime.
And have you got the money to do that? Yeah. And some of the filings will be from groups to whom I contribute, and I'm unhappy that that's where my money will have to go.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So this session, they passed virtually nothing. We're having the worst flooding in this state that we've had in years. We're not worried about that. Shouldn't the legislature be maybe addressing that? Or?
Yeah. And our highways, our congestion, our environment, you know, days when you can't breathe. Should we not be concerned about that?
And school funding.
You think school funding is important?
You would think.
You know,
major problem. Even a conservative judiciary has found our school funding is illegal,
mm-hmm.
and we didn't address that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't understand how we could disregard some fundamental issues in favor of chasing down rabbit holes for things that the state doesn't even want.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it wasn't the legislature in which I served. I would have been miserable. I didn't want to leave the legislature.
Mm-hmm.
I was drawn out of the district I worked for.
Right.
I would love to have stayed, but I would have had a nervous breakdown the last few legislative sessions. I really would have.
I believe you.
I would have been a basket case.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, one of the things I think we've had as a blessing in the legislature this session and previous ones has been the presence not as a legislator, but as a lobbyist per se, of Glenn Maxey.
Oh, Glenn!
And he has been actively involved all the way through. And I would trust him with our lives to let us know, and he has.
Yes.
When something's really bad and we need to take action.
And you know, he didn't do that as a legislator.
Mm-mm.
He really never used his persona as a gay legislator. He never did that. But now that he's out of the legislature, he has served in that capacity well, and I'm grateful for it, too.
Oh, I am, too. Mm-hmm. It's like a voice of sanity, at least in the gallery, if not in the committee room.
You know, Celia was our guest last week. Basically a freshman legislator. It's actually, it's her second term, but she was a midterm. So this is the first actual session that she's served in.
The Honorable Celia Israel.
And yes, the Honorable, it's amazing that one lesbian freshman
could do what she's done.
Because all this, you know, everything Glenn Maxey did and everything that Equality Texas did and everything that all of us did when we went down to lobby and things that we wrote about in the paper, and none of that would have happened unless she maneuvered it on the floor.
She
was brilliant.
Yes, she did. And that is remarkable. We are we're very fortunate, very fortunate to have her.
To have a voice of sanity in the legislature.
And we have Mary Gonzalez, too.
Well, and we do. And she and Mary apparently work together very well.
I'm sure they did.
They had to. You know, we're crediting one person for being so fantastic, but it takes a lot of people. Bills that got put just into the right committees, fortunately. And so many of them died. As bad as the ones were that came through, there were so many bad bills. All of the bathroom bills died.
Yeah.
So all those stupid bills.
Which would have been terrible for a challenged group. Mm-hmm. It wouldn't be easy to be transgender. That would not be an easy life. Would not be one you'd select for your child.
Mm-hmm.
But when that is, when that's the reality, I'm so glad that we're not putting any more roadblocks in their way to live the kind of normal life that they deserve.
Mm-hmm.
So for the record, all of those horrible bills are gone.
Yes.
We have one more day of the legislature.
I don't think there's any possible way they can put it on amend it at this point. I believe they're gone.
So we'll see.
We'll see.
Yeah.
They might surprise us.
A special session that looms, but in the special session, the governor has to determine exactly what will be on, and so normally bad bills don't come in special sessions.
And they have to stick to that topic, too,
yes,
right?
Yes, they do. They can't even amend a bill.
Unless it has to do
germane.
With...
Has to be germane.
Okay, so the legislature... They're nuts. They're over. They'll be gone. Let's get rid of some of them.
And Glenn Maxey posted today on Facebook just a little while ago that he was going to a 3-year-old's party. And he said the conversation was very much the same there as it was in the legislature.
I went to Austin for a fundraiser by a group of lobbyists, women lobbyists. And they said, you know, what experience have you had? And I said, well, I guess, and I did serve on the school board, but mainly, really, I'm a kindergarten teacher. And they said, oh, you'll be fine.
In fact, you'll probably be the leader.
You'll be right at home.
So now we know how to get our training to go into the legislature and where to look for our new leader. You know, Harriet, we wanted to talk to you a little bit about this legislature, but we've talked this one to death. I mean, all these bad bills, we got rid of them.
I was saying, as we said in our chatting beforehand, what the legislature has proved is that they hate women more than they hate gays.
Mm-hmm.
So is that progress? I'm not sure. But the kinds of things they did to women and to our school children in this session are just charred of criminal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I wasn't kidding when I asked you this question about are they deranged or are they criminal?
I'm not sure. I think a little bit of both.
And part of the criminal comes from people are dying down in South Texas. I mean, in Dallas, we've had record rain. But the rain basically has flowed into the river and is staying between the levees.
But it's going
Dallas.
Somewhere else.
From here, it's going elsewhere.
Somewhere else is what's going to be, yes.
And they're getting rain, too. So
big trouble in terms of of our environment in that capacity, and in being able to breathe, mm-hmm. which is, you know, quite important. Yeah.
Well, maybe if we weren't, if the Texas Guard wasn't so busy watching U.S. troops,
just
and they
insane.
Were actually helping,
just
we'd
insane.
Be in a better position. One reason that we asked Harriet on, she has wonderful stories.
And we're talking. She has a wonderful life. What an experience.
I do have a wonderful life. You are correct.
Okay, so.
Jack and I are very, very blessed.
We're going to go back further, but while we're talking about the legislature, there weren't women's rooms in the legislature.
When I went to the legislature, it was the first session it had been remodeled. In fact, there was still sawdust. There were still places that weren't quite finished when we went in. But that was the first time that there was a restroom on the floor for women. Prior to that time, they were all, you had to go to another floor. You had to go to the basement.
1990s?
In the 90s? Oh, yes.
Wow.
Yeah, Harriet started serving in 1994. When were the first women elected to the Texas legislature?
The first woman was a friend of my grandmother's, and she was way back in the maybe late 20s, early 30s, but there was a great space between her service and ours. When I served, there had been a total of 30 women from the beginning of Texas history.
Hmm. Oh, my God.
30 women.
Wow.
And I can't ever remember whether it's 2,000 or 8,000 men. I should know the difference mm-hmm. between those. But nonetheless, it was a huge, thousands of men and 30 women.
Hmm. And so what we're really talking about here is they had no plans by design whatsoever, never gave it a thought that a woman could ever serve in the Texas
It's place. More than just serve.
Because they didn't even plan for a restroom.
But it's more than just serve. There's the whole gallery upstairs that no woman would ever be a reporter and report on the legislature, right. that no woman would ever lobby the legislature, that no woman would ever have business in and Texas is the state that elected the first woman governor.
That's right.
What did she do when she went to the Capitol?
Well, she was amazing. There are wonderful stories about her. Of course, she really wasn't the governor. It really was her impeached husband. But one of the most fun stories about Ma Ferguson was when a group came to her and thought it would be nice if the high school students in Texas could learn some foreign language, maybe Latin or something, have some introduction to that. And Ma Ferguson said, heavens no. If God had wanted our children to speak a foreign language, he wouldn't have had Jesus speak English.
And that's the basis of our educational system.
That's right.
And it's still present and live here in 2015.
And the thinking of the ledge.
The ghost of Ma Ferguson permeates our legislature.
Wow. Oh, my God.
You think which was good enough for Jesus?
It's good enough for our children. Absolutely.
I thought you were going to say that the foreign language they could learn is American English.
Well, she probably hadn't thought of that.
That goes right along with, the Earth is only 6,000 years old.
There you go. And flat, although I think it maybe really is more flat than we think.
Well, if it is, maybe we can push some of these legislators off the side. So that might be a good thing. I'm hoping for that. So, I want to go back to your childhood and where your liberal nonsense came from, Harriet.
You know, I'm really not sure. One of our listeners today is my sister, mm-hmm. and she is not nearly as liberal as I. The two of us just agree to disagree.
She's just a left-wing extremist?
No, she's not even. She's way far from there. And when I called her this morning, I said, be sure you don't have my brother-in-law listen today at all. That would be an inappropriate thing. And yet we love one another, but we're very different. But my parents were very accepting. They certainly insisted that we be my dad in Mississippi was one of the first to be sure that that the black band players had an opportunity to learn music, and that was not done in the 30s in Mississippi. So we had that upbringing, and I'm very grateful for that. But my mother and father never really wanted me to go into politics. This was not the area they had in mind. You did not discuss religion, sex, or politics in our home at all. It was just not a topic that was acceptable. So I kind of am a maverick of that. I'm very grateful to my husband for that, because Jack has not only tolerated but encouraged me to step out in unknown places.
I always thought it was you who encouraged Jack to step out.
We've gone together, but he has been the wind beneath my sails, literally.
Well, and I understand this. This is, of course, a story, but when he was driving, he didn't drive around. He would drive through SMU.
No,
he would never drive through the campus of SMU.
He would not go by SMU. I left SMU because they didn't want a woman of my ilk for a whole other story. But nonetheless,
they wouldn't give you tenure.
They would not give me tenure. No, I was the first woman to have a doctorate at SMU. And so the threat of a woman with tenure was more than the dean could bear. So I left SMU under other than good circumstances. I think they have done an about face now, and I'm very proud of what they've done. Their openness and accepting is
doesn't mean Jack's going to forgive him.
But Jack doesn't forgive him. No way.
Around SMU via to travel.
I like Jack.
Yeah, Jack's neat.
Jack's a great guy.
Okay, so we have time for one story before we take a break. There's a story, I've heard you tell it, but I haven't heard it in years, about your about somebody came to the door.
Yeah, well, my I thought of it as I was driving and enjoying the Jewish section earlier today. My dad was a musician, and so when World War II was over, he was the director of the orchestra at SMU, but he took other music jobs. That was when Temple Emmanuel had a paid quartet that sang, and Dad was the bass, and he directed the choir at the Presbyterian Church and had other musical experiences. So one Friday evening, the doorbell rang, and my mom came to the door with her hands soapy with an apron, and the gentleman said, is this George Bouchon's home? And mother said, yes, it is. Well, is this the George Bouchon who belonged to the First Baptist Church? And my mother said, yes, it was, but when we married, George compromised and joined the Episcopal Church with us. So he crossed out Baptist, wrote down Episcopal. Which Episcopal Church do you go to on Sunday morning, Mrs. Bouchon? Oh, we don't. We go to the First Presbyterian Church. Jack directs the choir there. He crossed out Episcopal, wrote down Presbyterian, and said, I assume you go there for their evening worship service on Sunday night. And mother said, no, you see, George is the director of the orchestra at SMU, and on Sunday evenings, we all go to Highland Park Methodist Church, where a group of faculty, Mrs. Bouchon, may I speak to your husband? And mother said, oh, I'm sorry. He's a Temple Emmanuel tonight.
I love that story.
And I remember she took her apron with bubbles all over it up on her face and relaxed.
Did his head explode?
And I think that's part of where Harriet's background comes from. I
mean,
that just says it. You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with Lauren Landis and the late Patty Fink, and we'll be back with more with the Honorable Harriet Earhart right after this.
This is Janice McCall from TCU, and I listen to the Lambda Week on 89.3 KNON FM, Dallas.
And welcome back to Lambda Weekly. We had to stop to remind people pay their pledges.
Yep.
If you haven't pledged, you can still go online to KNON.org, hit the pledge button, and make a pledge to Lambda Weekly. And we appreciate that. Before we go back to Harriet, some very important news. You know, several years ago, Aaron was Grand Marshal, right, Lauren?
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. We can't have just Aaron. I mean, what kind of a household is that? Patty's up for it this year.
And so, I have to say, I was just blown away. I've been so humbled by the nomination itself. This is an incredible experience.
So anybody and everybody can go to dallaspride.org, yes. Right? Dallaspride.org, mm-hmm. And go to the voting. And you can. I'm not going to tell you who to vote for because we're a non-commercial station, mm-hmm. And we don't
favor one political group over another.
Exactly. But you can vote for Patty.
Yes, you can.
Well, thank you, and I appreciate
and keep harmony in the household.
Yes, that's right.
I already did it.
Oh wow! Well, thank you, Laurent.
You're welcome.
I have to say, I'm blown away by the nominees. Are just a wonderful group of people, and this is the first time, for the first time ever, mm-hmm. That there have been nominations without gender consideration. And I think we should thank Nell Gaither for that.
And that's the first time, if I'm not mistaken, there's a transgender person.
Right. We have two trans nominees. And so,
which is awesome.
I just think it's incredible. So I'm thrilled by the whole experience.
Mm-hmm.
So
good.
Whether I win or not, I'm it's great to be nominated. And it's a
yes,
it's a wonderful
but there won't
thing.
Be peace in your household if you lose.
Oh, we sure there will.
She'll have her medal, you won't.
That's okay.
No, it's not.
It's been okay for years now.
No.
So when
it's been causing terrible strife in the Fink.
When is the deadline? When is the voting end? And what will they announce?
Oh, I don't know.
It's probably a few weeks. We'll find out next week.
Good.
So, we're talking to Harriet Earhart, the Honorable Harriet Earhart. She's a former state rep, served in the Texas legislature for 8 years before they became nuts. And
we should clarify that, though, that you were redistricted out, along with Glenn Maxey.
Out of my district. They drew every single Caucasian mm-hmm. Democratic woman out that one time. Mm-hmm. They drew every one of us out.
Like by four houses or something.
This was the Tom DeLay redistricting.
Three houses.
Tom DeLay's.
My story about that was the dividing line between Pete Sessions and Eddie Bernice Johnson went right down Belmont Street, where I lived at the time, and everybody to the south was in Eddie Bernice Johnson's district. Everybody to the north except me was in Pete Sessions' district. The line went around my house. What did I do? How did they even know me?
The gerrymandering is sick.
Mm-hmm.
And getting worse. The Supreme Court's going to deal with that right away, but probably not in a positive way. Mm-hmm. Really, what we need is some way to have legislative districts drawn to represent what they're supposed to, and that is communities of interest. That was totally disregarded when they drew me out of the district mm-hmm. for which I worked.
Mm-hmm.
Not because I had special rights as someone who was in the legislature, but because I worked for a group of people who should have had the right to select whom they wanted. And the district was drawn in such a way that that right was taken away from them.
You know, if it was just you, you would say, you know, Harriet, luck of the draw. And when they were drawing it, you know, you got districted. Every white woman was districted
and
out.
And Glenn Maxey.
And Max.
Well, that's what we said, every white woman.
That's right. There you go.
I knew that was coming.
Oh, I didn't see that coming. Glenn would love it.
He would.
Yes, he would.
You know, we're talking stories with Harriet because she has some wonderful stories. This one I hadn't heard. Well, you know what? We'll hold that one. Because I want to give a little bit more background. You decided to go into politics when?
We had five children. We have five children, all of whom are DISD children. Mm-hmm. And I was grateful for what DISD had given our children. And at the encouragement of a number of people, felt like we owed my offering my service in that capacity as a DISD trustee. I've been a teacher, a parent, a child, and felt like that was something I owed the district. And that was in 78, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And so for those 5 years, I served politically in DISD's trustee.
Mm-hmm.
And you were president of the DISD Board of Trustees.
No, I was never president.
Oh, you weren't?
No.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But she was the one that teachers could actually go talk to. Because she served under Nolan Estes.
I served under Nolan.
Yeah.
When Nolan was going to get rid of every gay teacher. Mm-hmm. That was a morning wake up one Friday morning. Jack brought a cup of tea and the newspaper under his arm, and he said, "We have a problem." And I looked at the headlines, called Sarah Haskins, who was my colleague, the chair of the personnel committee. I said, "Sarah, have you seen this morning's paper?" And she said, "Yeah, but it couldn't be a real problem, Harriet. Don't worry about it. We couldn't have more than two or three gay teachers in Dallas."
I'm sure not. Still don't.
We have a really big problem. And that was my introduction to the gay community, mm-hmm. which at that time was a community that existed totally under the radar. Mm-hmm. Totally under the radar.
Also by design.
By necessity.
Because, yeah.
By absolute necessity, mm-hmm. for their safety. Their life, mm-hmm. Their well-being, their employment, their family. I mean, everything was at risk. And so there were no gay people in Dallas, mm-hmm. in 89, 90. If you had asked anybody, they would have said, nobody's gay in Dallas. There couldn't be more than two or three gay teachers. And that was the general thinking, how ridiculous we were at that time.
And it was during the 80s that, yeah. Cedar Springs became the street, so everybody just thought, well, they all live, you know, they do all their shopping on Cedar Springs. There's a supermarket, they're the, yeah. you know, all the stores that they need, a couple of restaurants. They never go outside of that, and they live two or three blocks from there.
Yeah, and that's
all of them.
That's it.
All of them.
And they're all corralled in that area, mm-hmm. as a matter of fact. It was, looking back on it now, it was just amazing that we could have lived in such a non-scientifically accurate mental state, but we did.
The legislature today, well, non-scientifically accurate mental state describes them.
They know better.
Yeah,
they know better. When I was in the legislature, this is a fact. When I served in the legislature, We were trying to get hate crimes passed. That was our big gay rights bill. And when I talked to my colleagues, they said, "I don't have anybody gay in my district." Mm-hmm. 90% of my colleagues believed that no one gay lived in their district.
Oh, they're so
they
naive.
They honestly thought that.
Mm-hmm. And we're talking in the 90s.
Yes,
here.
We're talking, yep. in the late 90s. Talking so. In the late 90s.
Well, I'm not talking about your background, and you credit your, you know, being very accepting to your parents. But even we all know someone who grew up that was supposedly very accepting. But when it came to gays, we were just another. That's another ball game. Did you know anybody that was gay? Have a gay relative?
I really didn't know that I knew anyone that was gay. I did not know that I knew anybody in high school. I did not know that I knew anyone that was gay. Jack and I were talking about that recently, and he said, maybe we thought a few sort of loose-wristed individuals might be gay, but we really didn't know. And I look back on that and I think, what were we thinking? Mm-hmm. Where were we? But that was the reality.
You know, people ask me all the time. I came out in the 70s, and, oh, it must have been so hard to come out then. And I always say, well, no. But I think it got harder before it became easier. Because it wasn't a topic that was talked about much.
Absolutely not.
And so I just knew I was gay. I came out. I had a few friends who were gay. I mean, we just, in college, we gravitated toward each other. My school actually had a gay alliance already.
Amazing.
Yeah. We were one of the first 10 in the
Amazing.
Country.
David didn't go to college. Texas.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Patty. Thank you. I was thinking the same thing. For our listeners, this was up in New York.
It was in New York, yeah. But still, yeah. It just wasn't something that was talked about.
It wasn't in the newspaper.
No.
The word homosexuality, the word gay, lesbian, you never saw those words.
Yeah.
They were dictionary words, but not words that were a part of anyone's conversation.
So it's easy, I think, to not know anybody who is gay because it just wasn't a topic.
And how terrible, how absolutely terrible it was for that 10%, maybe more, of the population who lived in that horrible atmosphere. But it was based on reality, because if you were gay in Dallas then, you would be fired. That would happen. You could be killed. Jack Hampton, the judge, gave a lesser sentence to the guys who beat to death a gay person they picked up on Oaklawn, said, I gave him a lesser sentence because I don't much like queers. Mm-hmm.
They're just homosexuals. They're just homosexuals.
I would do the same thing if they were prostitutes, he said. Mm-hmm. I mean, so the reality was it was dangerous to be gay.
Mm-hmm. And just as a little asterisk on there, the next election... Barbara Rosenberg, the Honorable Barbara Rosenberg, stepped up and kicked him out of that seat. Mm-hmm.
And we're not sure whether she won or he lost, but we didn't care which it was.
Either way, it was great.
We took it.
But Barbara wasn't out at the time.
Oh, no, Barbara definitely was.
So. No.
Okay, so that's your background. You're on the school board. And you actually physically, the only person I ever knew who actually physically knew somebody who came out of the closet, Don Baker.
And Don Baker was a wonderful person, made a great contribution to us. At this time, Nolan Estes was going to fire every gay teacher, as we've mentioned.
And all three of them.
All three. Maybe two. And the way he'd know is the kids would be able to tell him. They'd know. You talk about the Inquisition. It would have been just amazing, horrible. But anyway, we met after that Friday, probably it was Saturday night, in an Oaklawn apartment, as a matter of fact, upstairs. Roberto Medrano and myself and Jack and Bill and Ray, who owned Dallas's first gay bars. And the minister of the then small church on Ross Avenue, which was the only gay church in Dallas, a little teeny house on Ross. And we were sitting there saying, what are we going to do about this? I mean, we do have a problem. The story that initiated Nolan saying he was going to fire the gay teachers was his saying that, and a teacher in DISD replying, well, we have lots of gay teachers. That'd be a major problem. So that teacher was behind me. Jack and I were sitting on a sofa, and behind me were doors, and this teacher was talking to us through those doors and saying, yes, this would be catastrophic because there are a lot of gay people in DISD's employment, and we talked back and forth, and finally he opened those doors with a wham and said, I'm not staying back here anymore. I'm coming out. My name is Don Baker, and I'm a DISD teacher. And so literally Jack and I got to see somebody come out of the closet.
Quite literally.
Don Baker had been a teacher of the year. He was a wonderful teacher. Yeah. And went on to serve the community in a number of ways.
And in fact, the Dallas Gay and Lesbian Alliance's 501c3 org is named for Don, the Dallas Gay and Lesbian Alliance Don Baker Education Fund.
That's right.
And it was Baker v. Wade the case that Judge Buckmeyer heard.
That's right.
That was the first case to throw out Texas's sodomy law.
That's right.
Was that related? His filing that.
That was all at that very same time, and I got to testify because the opposition's position was, well, why should we change 2106, which was the criminal law, 21.06, the criminal law, which made a criminal offense homosexual behavior. And the opposition's position was, well, why should we change that law? No one pays any attention to it. Mm-hmm. And my position, testifying before Buckmeyer, was we are making every one of our teachers lie. Every gay teacher in Dallas has to lie because they must swear, as every elected person must swear, that we will follow the laws of the state. And they were not going to follow that law if they were active in the gay community. Mm-hmm. And so we forced them to lie. And I said, it's wrong for us to force our teachers to lie. Mm-hmm.
And in fact, it wasn't until 2003 that law was struck down. by the United States
Supreme
Court.
Right, because Baker v. Wade in Jerry Buckmeyer's court won on appeal. They reversed it.
It lost at Fifth Circuit.
Right. So, and it did not get to the Supreme Court. It was Hardwick, which was a Georgia case,
right,
that got to the Supreme Court. They upheld sodomy laws.
Yeah.
And then in 2003,
they overturned themselves.
Yeah, it was finally thrown out.
The law is still on the books.
Yes. The law is still on the books.
We still have that book. We still have that law in Texas.
It's not a wasteful spending of government to do ink and paper to keep that in the book.
There you go.
But by golly, they're keeping
still
it.
Still there.
We're not worried about wasteful spending this session. We're not worried about anything other than hurting women, hurting gays, hurting transgender people,
and guys,
hurting kids,
and guns, really messing up
and making
schools,
sure everybody has guns and that they're out and pointed at you.
Absolutely. Every school with guns, mm-hmm, on the campus. I just imagine horrible.
So what's wrong with that? What's wrong with that?
What's dangerous, among other things.
I just saw a poll this week allowing guns on college campuses. They polled college students across Texas, and huge majority do not want guns on their campus.
I would feel at risk every time I went to class.
Oh, absolutely.
And most law enforcement doesn't want it either.
No. The students are saying things like...
universities don't want it.
No. Mm-mm. But the students are saying things like, I don't want people walking around with guns out or with guns when they're coming home drunk from the bars.
Absolutely.
Oh, well, no, the drinking age is 21.
Oh, yeah, so none
right.
of them
so
drink
none of them
in
drink.
College. There you go.
Nobody drinks in college anymore.
And
I forgot
there's no gay
that.
People on college campuses.
Well, three.
There will, however, be guns.
Yes, there will be guns. Guns will get their degrees.
Pretty sad.
It really is. We're going to take our break a minute early. You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with Ron Landis and the late Patty Fink. Our guest today is the Honorable Harriet Earhart, and we'll be back with more right after.
This is Jason Wright from Dallas, and I listen to Lambda Week 89.3 KNON.
And welcome back to Lambda Weekly. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with late Patty Fink and Laurent Landis, our guest. And Harriet is looking at me every time I call you the late Patty Fink.
I know what you're doing.
I'm not dead. I'm
it's
not dead.
It's discriminatory.
Thank you, Harriet.
No. Patty, how do I answer the phone at 10 to 1 every week? Hi, you're running a little bit late.
And she says, I'll be there. And she is.
I will
there
be there.
You go.
That's right. We're talking some of Harriet's wonderful stories. You and Juanita Craft, who was the first African-American to serve in the Dallas City Council.
A legend in this town.
Yeah, great and wonderful Juanita Craft.
Eddie Bernice Johnson told us the story of how she and Juanita Craft went out and paid people's poll taxes so that they could vote.
Yeah.
And they had limited amount of money, but they paid for as many people to vote as possible.
Yeah.
You and Juanita Craft...
We served together.
You didn't do something as serious. You went to the bars together.
Well, and for
a good
somewhat
reason.
Different reasons. Juanita did not drive. And so Councilwoman Craft would call a Dallas City car to pick her up and carry her to the bars for a specific purpose. She appreciated the gay community long before that was the end thing to do, and long before Jack and I knew anything about it. And that was because the only real organization in the gay community was the bars. And they raised money to send Juanita Craft's black children to Washington every year. They raised that money and chartered the buses. And Juanita was grateful for that. And she showed that appreciation by being sure that there would be a city bus, a city car at bars, because license numbers were taken at bars and given them immediately to the employees of anybody parked by a gay bar so that they could be fired the next day. And they were. And Juanita found that very offensive. So she went to the gay bars in order to make that statement. And all the gay bars, and there probably were three or four, one of them very close to here on Maple. But she went to make that statement and to show support to the people there.
So
and
that they could put her Dallas...
Her license number in the license numbers that were taken down. And all the bars kept buttermilk for her. She only drank buttermilk, and every gay bar had buttermilk. Now, Jack and I went for a different reason. We went, first of all, because I've got more information about DISD was I was on the school board. I knew everything. I knew everything.
From those three gay people?
From those three gay teachers? Yeah, they were all you'd just be amazed at how those three gay people. But I had information on what was going on in DISD that just bumfuzzled everybody else. They had no idea how I found out. Well, I knew people in the leadership of accounting who'd say, you need to look at so-and-so, and coaches and principals. In fact, I digress just a minute, but I must tell you my fun principal story. I'd had a particularly bad day at DISD's board one time, and for some reason, I didn't have my car, and Jack couldn't pick me up right then, so the board meeting was over, and I was frazzled, so I called Ray, who owned the Villa Fontaine, who was just three blocks, Dallas's first gay bar, mm-hmm. just three blocks from the administration building. I said, I've had an H of a time. Come pick me up. I need you to get, I need to come to the bar for a, and Jack will meet me there. So he picked me up and left, telling the people at the bar, I'll be right back. I'm going to pick up Harriet Earhart at the school board meeting. I'll be right back. So when he brought me back, I went in, sat down, and this guy next to me just turned ashen. He said, I didn't think you meant that. And I said, what are you? And Ray said, he's a principal in DISD. And he tore out of the door. And I ran after him, chased him halfway down the block. I said, stop. I've had one heck of a day working for you. The least you could do is buy me a drink. And he came back, and he did.
Oh, awesome.
That is incredible.
But back then, he saw a school board member.
He was panicked.
He was sure.
He was panicked.
Well, today was my last day
That's
of school.
That's it. I'll be mm-hmm. not only fired, but you were physically in danger. Mm-hmm. When Jack and I publicly took the position we did, our son was beat up. Our son was
really?
Beat up because of it. We had a police car parked out in front of our house 24/7.
Wow.
We had death threats. Our kindergarten daughter had a DISD police officer stay with her in kindergarten. That's what it was like.
Wow.
We got calls, half of which I didn't understand. It was vocabulary with which I was not familiar. but we got death threats. It was not mm-hmm. safe. Not only was it not safe to be gay, it wasn't even safe to support gay issues. But anyway, we took Bonita Kraft home one night from the bar, told her she could let the city car go, and we take her home. So we took her home. It was 10:30, 11 o'clock at night, and she had a little high voice, and she said, Dr. Earhart, as long as you are here, do you mind hanging the curtains in my house? And Jack went in and hung Juanita Kraft's curtains at 11 o'clock at night.
That's great.
Oh, wow.
It was an honor. Like I say, we've had a wonderful time. I'm
and
so
her,
fortunate.
Her house, probably where he hung those drapes, is a historic place now.
It is. It was moved from the spot it was. But not only did we get to hang the drapes, but when she died, and they did decide to make it the shrine to her, which it should be, they needed chairs that were the kind of chairs she had on the front porch, and they were the kind of chairs that Jack's mother had given to us. And so we gave our chairs, and they sat. They probably do still sit on the front porch of Juanita Kraft's house.
Where awesome. Is the Juanita Kraft house now?
Okay, it's a city park, kind of close to Fair Park, not on Pine, but over in that area. They've moved it from the original location, and it is a city. It is a mm-hmm. city park.
Yeah, I knew the original location. I didn't know where they moved it to.
No, they've moved it.
Now, you were talking about Villa Fontaine, which was the first gay bar in Dallas.
Right.
Was it the very first one?
The very first
Okay, very first
bar.
One. It was on Live Oak Street.
Right off of Live Oak, three houses.
And
we have their fountain in our backyard.
I was going to say, you have their fountain.
Really?
Yeah,
we do.
Wow.
Have their fountain in our backyard.
When they went out of business, how did that happen?
Well, Bill and Ray were very, very dear, close friends. One of the reasons we don't need folks having guns is that Ray was shot by his own gun in the florist shop that he had in North Carolina. They came in and grabbed his gun and killed him.
Oh,
he
wow.
never should have had a gun. Mm-hmm. It was never a good idea. But Bill and Ray owned the Villa Fontaine, and then three houses from it on Live Oak were the Baths. There were two Baths in Dallas. This, of course, was before HIV. And the Baths were alive and well. So they owned both of those.
Oh, I didn't realize they owned those too. And what happened to them?
Bill died fairly recently at his property in East Texas that he owned. And Ray was in North Carolina in the florist that he owned and was killed with his own gun.
Wow.
Okay, but Bill just retired.
Bill retired. They both retired in the late 90s. They must. Oh. Ray was killed probably in 2000.
I didn't know that story.
Yeah.
Wow.
Huh.
Yeah.
Bill and Ray were very active.
Just said to you, "Would you like a fountain?"
Yeah. We were very close. Yeah. Jack loaned money to him. Out of his medical office's retirement fund. They were a little short of cash, and he loaned them a few thousand dollars. And it happened to be that we got audited. Jack got audited. And when he did, the IRS guy said, "Well, this is a medical retirement fund. You say that you loan money to a bar." And Jack said, "Yes, I did." And he said, "Well, how could you have done such? What kind of bar was it?" Jack said, "Well, it was a gay bar." The auditor paled significantly, and Jack said, "But if you look at the numbers, you'll see that it made more money for us than any other investment we ever made."
And it was clear.
It was clear.
All right.
It was fully paid back. But we have some of their furniture. We have pictures that they've given us, some art that we keep at the lake house.
And I guess the reason the bar didn't get passed on to anybody else, everything moved over to Cedar Springs.
It did.
Yeah.
Well, and that area became, from a bar, it became a lesbian meeting area that had books and things.
Oh, it became the Lesbian Resource Center.
Well, for a brief period of time. Yes, mm-hmm. That was the same structure.
Oh, okay.
And then the Baths was just three houses away, and the basement of the Baths was the first lesbian bar. The corner basement of the Baths was Dallas's first lesbian
bar. Was that Joe Elliott's?
Was that the name of it? I don't know. I never did go there. We only went to gay bars.
You didn't go to the basement at the Baths, but I understand that you've been to the Baths.
I have been to the Baths.
Yeah, tell us the story.
It was the Baths.
It's a great story.
In probably about 91 or 2, we had a horrible, horrible freeze in Dallas, and everybody's pipes froze. And the Baths had lots and lots of pipes. And Bill and Ray, to find a plumber was, of course, impossible. Even to find plumbing parts was impossible. But I'm a pretty good plumber. For Mother's Day, Jack gave me my own acetylene torch.
When she got to the Capitol, she built her own bathroom. There weren't any women's
rooms.
Hey, I'll do it.
But plumbing is one of the things I do. I can't spell, and I'm not on time, but I do. I'm a good plumber. So.
But she was here earlier than Patty. I'm just putting that in.
So Bill and Ray said, "Oh, can you help us with our plumbing?" I said, "Sure, I'd be glad to." So I gathered up all our plumbing parts. Jack came with me. I gathered up our plumbing parts and my torch and went to the Baths. And that was quite interesting.
I'm sure it was.
I had never really seen quite that much plumbing before, as a matter of fact. We fixed all the plumbing. We glued the plastic pipes, and they were back in business right away, way before most people's plumbing.
And I'm sure the only reaction from all the guys who were there was, "Oh, hi, Harriet."
It's just Harriet. No, I think they were quite surprised, actually. Well, see, there
what are you doing here, Harriet?
People there because their hot tub was out of service. Yeah. We had to replumb it, and the showers were a mess.
You know, the freeze you're talking about, that was early 80s. Because it was the winter after...
Oh, that's right. It was before... It was the 80s.
It was the winter after that summer that we had all those 100-degree days
that's
in a row.
That's right. It was the early 80s that I would have gone.
Yeah.
That's right.
So it's that long ago.
Yeah.
We fixed the plumbing. So you've been a kindergarten teacher, a principal, a state legislature, and
school board.
And a plumber. Mm-hmm.
So, well,
probably the most lucrative, by far the most lucrative is the plumbing.
I believe that. I do believe that.
And I believe she is the only straight Kuechling winner.
I believe so.
I'm wow. so proud wow. of that.
Because I'm
so
not straight.
Well, no.
Really? We're not publicly outing
but,
you, are we?
yeah, maybe.
Every year on National Coming Out Day, we always try to push him. You know, take that next step, David.
Take that next step. Come out.
You know, I did sign that the very first time we ever had that.
It was an amazing time.
One of my Republican opponents, who shall go unnamed, said to a group of Republicans, "Well, it's good that Harriet Earhart finally came out as a lesbian."
Really?
And I said, my response to that was, "What an honor."
Well, and as a matter of fact, when we were at what we affectionately call the crack house, the studio was over on San Jacinto, and you were on the show many times, we actually did Who Wants to Be a Lesbian?
Oh, right.
We used to play a game.
That. And I remember so well, as we started the music and we were about to do the game, you leaned into the mic and you said, "I love you, Jack." But then you became an honorary lesbian.
Because she got she aced all the questions.
I can ace the questions. I am honored to be a part of the community.
Mm-hmm. And we're honored to have you.
Absolutely.
Believe me.
Yeah. I want to go back a little bit into how you actually became – you went from not knowing any gay people to being an advocate in a way that gay people weren't.
Well, we are very blessed. Jack and I – played a role that was very much needed then. Mm-hmm. They needed...
We needed 100 of you.
Yeah. Well, I'm not sure about
We had one of
but
you.
But it was handy. We were handy in a lot of ways. John Thomas took us with him to one of the first black ties so that we could sit at the table with his family and make it okay. Mm-hmm. Richard Longstaff used our living room to bring his mother for high tea because she did not know he was gay. And when she came over from England, he needed a place.
Richard owned Union Jack
on
Cedar Springs. The first gay retail store on Cedar Springs.
Yeah, and a wonderful one. Our back house was a safe place. We've had several lesbian couples and gay couples who have lived there because they were not safe in their apartments and they were safe at our house. And we've had lots of young people whose moms and dads did not understand how the appropriate way to be the parent of a gay child. And it's been important to have a straight couple say, "I think you're wonderful. God loves you. You're not a bad person." And we have been in a unique position to play that role. And we're very grateful for it. I mean, it's been a wonderful opportunity. So it wasn't... I don't feel like we have contributed nearly as much as we have had contributed to us, because we've been in a unique position just because we happen to have been born straight.
But not every city has a Harriet.
Well, that's not true. And yes, they do. It's not that big a deal.
It is a
big deal, because you were advocating for the gay community before the gay community even had any inkling of how do we advocate for ourselves. And it's not that you did it alone. You were friendly with John and Bill and Terry Thibodeau, Bill Nelson and Terry Thibodeau. Yeah. There were others
and
who
John
were there. It was a small
the
group.
Creek Corral.
But you were right out there.
Well, We were very fortunate. Mm-hmm. We were very fortunate. It's kind of like we were standing there and the ball came our way and it just hit us in the stomach. Mm-hmm. So we had no choice but to catch it. We were very fortunate.
Yeah. And it has to do with you're coming from a family that just people need our help, so we're going to help.
Yeah. Now, that is true. Our family did think that. I can't say that my parents were accepting of gays because we didn't know we knew any.
Right.
And I love how you put that, because so many people think there are no gays because they don't know any. But you didn't know you knew some.
No.
Because they're here. We're here.
Of course. Mm-hmm. Of course.
And always have been here.
Yeah. Percentage was the same then as it is now. That hasn't changed. Right. That's a biological, scientific act.
Yeah. Like left-handedness.
To do with us. And
like 10% of the community.
Eyes and all that sort of thing.
People always ask me, well, who were your role models? Because I came out before
you didn't
there was a gay
me.
Community here. Well, I did. I had college professors.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Who had served in World War II. And were my role models, and they had role models. It was their professors.
Yeah.
Because I asked them.
Yeah.
Who their role models were.
And we had authors, and we had scientists, and we had musicians, but we really didn't know that. We really didn't. When we found out, when we were introduced to the gay community, there was a subliminal, there was a subculture that was incredible. It was huge. It was when they just started... you had to put gas in your own car.
Mm-hmm.
Jack and I would drive into a gas station. We never put gas in our own car.
Wow.
When we call to go to a restaurant, no problem. Best seats right there.
Wow.
I mean, there were things that were quietly done to express appreciation to us in a community, from a community, that we didn't know existed until then.
Mm-hmm.
And a powerful one, I might say. One of the most powerful political forces today is what has evolved from that time.
Yeah.
No politician that has any sense would try to get elected without catering to the gay community.
Right. Well, Harriet, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you
this has
so
been
much
good
for
see
a
you.
Lot of fun. What a pleasure.
It is,
thank you.
It was
I had
great
a good
back.
Time. Good, I'd love to.
And we'll be back next week with more Lambda Weekly.